court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Court appointed. Two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy, it's good to have you back.
Well, it's good to be back, Michael Bud. I missed you, little buddy.
I feel like you've been gone.
I know, I have. But, you know, it was awful nice of Sydney and Justin to swap out with us on Sawbones and cover the same topic from the two different perspectives, and hopefully that gave everybody a lot of insight on that subject.
It was a lot of fun, and having Justin on Court Appointed was pretty awesome. I learned a lot of professional podcasting tips from such a media luminary.
And myself, being with Sydney, she's such a prepared podcaster and does her research and has notes and you know exactly where she's going with things, so you can kind of plan where you're going with things. It was just a complete and total switch.
I feel like you're implying that I am less than prepared or I do not have notes.
Oh no, not at all. I know you have notes. I just don't know what you're going to say next.
I kind of like it that way. It's like the little bit of surprise.
Keep me on my toes, huh?
That's right. It's all up here in the old noggin.
Well, anyway, you know what they say. There's no place like home.
That's right.
So I'm glad to be back with you, little buddy. Court appointed rides again.
That's right. I feel like I took a little knock on the head or something. I don't really know what happened.
I think that may have been it.
There was the Tin Man, the Cowardly Lion, and the Straw Man or something.
Well, heck, nobody was lying. Your head is looking a little lumpy, though, so I don't
know. Yeah. I dabble in phrenology.
In phrenology, is that reading the lumps on people's heads?
I think it is. Yeah, it's a little bar trivia
it's
for
like
you there.
Braille on your head.
Yeah, head braille. So this episode is going to be on adverse possession and squatter's rights.
Adverse possession and squatter's rights. Possession is 9/10 of the law. I've always heard that. I don't know what the hell that means, but I've always heard that.
Well, on that same note, I have some bad news for you.
What's that?
I now own your basement.
What?
I own your basement.
Because you moved all your crap in my basements and took up half of it, so now you own half my basement?
I've been storing some of my prized possessions down there. People don't know this, but I've moved some of my surfboards, my fishing rods, the plastic wrecked end from a Ferrari 458 is in there.
That's what I was going to ask you. What's that damn bumper down there for?
It's off a Ferrari 458.
And if you don't have the rest of it, what the hell good is the bumper?
Piece by piece, I'm building a Ferrari. So that's the first step in Mike's Ferrari.
Is that like that, what was it, a Johnny Cash song? Where the guy built the Cadillac one piece at a time, smuggling it out of the plant over 10 years, and he put together a Cadillac with parts from 10 years worth of them something?
One of my friends in Florida, he works for Motorola, and they do the communications for all the different, the Ferrari team down there. And so I got to do the full access Rockstar pass to go to some races and see the Ferrari cars up front, and actually got to ride in a Ferrari around the racetrack. That was amazing. So anyway, they had a wreck. And the front end popped off, and when we were leaving, they took it over and they threw it in the dumpster. And I was like, I'll take that home. I can do something with that. So it hung in my garage.
Yeah, what you did with it is put it in my basement.
Well, it hung in my garage forever. The amazing thing about it was the machining of the screws and everything is it's amazing engineering. So no wonder those cars are so expensive.
Wait. Here's the way that story really went. As you were leaving, these guys were complaining. Said, man, we got to clean up all this mess. And here's some little gullible kid from West Virginia, and they say, and he says, golly, can I have that bumper? Sure, kid, you can have it.
The
bumper.
I've never seen a Ferrari.
A Ferrari?
Well, anyway, yeah, your basement's mine, so.
Yeah, thanks.
So squatter's rights. For whatever reason, when I think of squatter's rights, I always think like Yosemite Sam from Bugs Bunny commercials. I don't know why. I don't know if there was maybe a Bugs Bunny episode where he took adverse possession of something or another. But I always think of some guy with two guns and a big mustache claiming some land.
I always think of Mary always tells the kids when we're getting them all together and giving instructions, you know, for theater productions and stuff. She tells them, cop a squat.
Cop a squat.
Yeah. That means like squat down right there or sit down right there or something like that. In other words, where you're at while I talk to you.
I thought that was
give you some instruction.
I thought that was a euphemism for peeing.
Well, no, and it would be number two. It wouldn't be number one.
Well, I mean, unless you're a chick and then.
Well, I guess.
I don't know.
Let's not get into that. This is not a bathroom habits podcast.
No, but it's full of bathroom humor.
It's not bathroom humor. It's dad joke humor. That's not quite the same thing. Get your mind out of the toilet.
So the history of squatters' rights.
You're Johnny on the spot, aren't you?
It dates back to Roman law. And under Roman law, usucapio.
How much have you been drinking before we started this? You came in with that mason jar and it's about half gone now. Is that moonshine?
Just water. I'm staying hydrated.
Yeah, right. I don't know about the drated.
But basically, it was a Roman law. I'm not good on the Roman pronunciations. I mean, I know Latin, but this is a...
Gallia est in Europa.
That's right. That's France is in Europe.
Correct.
Yeah, it only took me like three times to get that one.
That's the only phrase I know, practically. That's one of three phrases. So
it was a Roman law which allowed somebody who was in possession of a good without title to become the lawful proprietor of if the original owner did not show up after a certain period of time. So this was not only for property and things like that, but I guess it was for any kind of property. Like you find something on the street.
Or a Ferrari bumper.
A Ferrari bumper.
You're now the lawful owner of a Ferrari bumper. That's congratulations.
Right. That's right. Congratulations.
And $5 will get you a cup of coffee.
So $5? Well, maybe it's Starbucks. I think that was probably the genesis of that whole possession is 9/10 of the law thing. Is, you know, you find something and then you have it for a certain amount of time. Well, it's mine. I have it. It's mine. So, but in modern day, adverse possession has certain elements, and there's different ways to perfect adverse possession. So in case you're kind of noticing a trend, under the law, a lot of things have elements or things that make up each individual lawsuit or legal theory. Basically, under common law, squatter or adverse possession is no different. So when I say squatter's rights and adverse possessions, I'm kind of using that like a little bit interchangeably because it's kind of the same thing.
Isn't that kind of a cool term, too? Adverse possession. That sounds better than squatter's rights.
Well, it does. I think
squatting here.
I think squatter's rights tends to be more of a Appalachian type.
A rural term.
Yeah. And, up in the holler.
But adverse possession. Now that sounds, you know, technical.
Well, I've been squatting up in that trailer up in the holler there, but I had to move out before my wife got common law on me. That's pretty Appalachian right there, isn't it?
The baby's mama.
Baby's mama. So adverse possession has essentially five elements. These five elements under common law, and this is the important thing too. When I say common law, that's basically law that was derived from England, and that's considered common law. Now, each state's going to have different kinds of specific state statutes or code that deal with adverse possession or squatter's rights, and it's going to differ state by state. But common law is kind of the general overlaying type theory behind all these different laws. And so most of these state codes and whatnot is going to have these essential five elements.
It's funny how as much as we rebelled from England and we wanted to come here and start our own country, but it was like, well, let's see if we need some laws. Let's use theirs.
Let's bring theirs.
They got it right. So let's use their laws.
We liked everything about them except paying them taxes.
Yeah. That's kind of I don't know.
It's very American. We don't want to pay taxes.
Yeah. We want your stuff, but we don't want to pay for it.
I feel that. So the first element is continuous. So essentially what this means is that you must have continual possession by a single adverse possessor or by successive adverse possessors so long as privity exists between them. So
privity.
Privity.
Privity?
Privity means like there has to be some sort of link between things. So, for example, privity of contract means that there has to be a contract between people. Privity for this kind of terminology can mean like father to son, mother to daughter, that kind of privity. Okay.
So, I was thinking about like when you're in going to the bathroom and somebody opens the door, you say, hey, can I have some privity here?
No, not that privity. It's a different kind of privity.
Isn't that what they call it on a boat, the privity?
Can I have some privity? I'm popping a squat in here.
So, copping a squat.
Copping a squat.
Don't pop one. That's pop a cap. Pop a cap in your ass.
Basically, by uninterrupted, that means that there's no vacations. You have to stay on this property. You have to hold it out. Like, you got to be.
Oh, God, if you want it, don't leave it.
Yeah, you got to be there. No trips to the beach. No listening to Jimmy Buffett. No drinking margaritas. No eating Low Country Boil.
Well, if you're having to squat there, you probably don't have the money for vacations anyway.
That's true. Or the...
What else are you going to do?
Accessibility.
That's your job at that point. I mean, that's your job. You're shirking your duties if you don't stay there and maintain that squatting. Exactly.
You got to pitch your tent right there and throw a flag up. So the second element is hostile. You need to be hostile to the interests of the true owner. So this is kind of the adverse portion of the adverse possession. And when I say hostile, I mean... That just means without the owner's possession. Yeah, without the owner's possession. It doesn't mean like you have to like dress up like a ghost or scaring away the real property owner, which we probably would have gotten away with had it been for those meddling kids.
What are you talking about, Scooby-Doo? Are you making a Scooby-Doo reference?
Aren't there a lot of elements in, like from those different people dressed up as...
Where they were always scaring people off or something?
Yeah.
Every Scooby-Doo had the same plot.
Right.
I mean, they all were the same thing. It was some greedy guy trying to scare off everybody else so he could own something or something like that. Or he found a treasure or something.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, basically Scooby-Doo is kind of adverse possession if you think about it. So, but that's not the right kind of hostility.
So if I go into court as a lawyer, I'm going to say, well, you remember Scooby-Doo episode number 23, wherein Shaggy said, oh, Scooby, and Scooby said, oh, oh, oh,
oh. Jinkies, that was a good Scooby-Doo impression. But yeah, hostile just basically means adverse to the interests of the true owner. That doesn't mean there's any kind of actual hostility taking place.
But you don't confront the owner in some way and run him off.
No, no, it's just basically...
You're just saying you're taking it and you know that they have every intention of keeping it, but you're taking it anyway?
Well, they don't have to have any intention of keeping it. You're basically just, you're holding yourself out as the true owner, which is adverse to their interest.
Hmm.
So you can't pretend to be them, basically. This would be like one way of saying it, I guess, maybe.
Oh, so you're going in and you're basically just going in and staking your claim to it.
Yeah. I'm Mike Meadows and this is my house.
I think of what was it, Monty Python, where they come up and they're attacking the castle and the guy's up there on top. He says, I fought in your general direction.
Your mother smells of edelberries.
Launch the cows.
The third element is open and notorious. And this is to put the true owner on notice that a trespasser is in possession of their property. So you actually have to hold yourself out and make it known that it is open and notorious that you are possessing this property.
Open and notorious?
Yes.
Like the notorious B.I.G.?
Exactly. Mo money, mo problems.
Not to be confused with the notorious P.I.G.
Confused.
Yeah, confused.
Notorious P.I.G.
That's when you're conflicted and confused. You're confused.
Who's the notorious P.I.G.? Is that Charlotte?
That's right.
Really?
Or Porky.
Porky. So if you use the property only in the middle of the night...
There's enough wool to knit a sweater.
If you use the property only in the middle of the night and you leave before daybreak, then you're not being open and notorious. You're being surreptitious. You need to be open and notorious, like you're holding yourself out. This kind of goes hand in hand with the hostilities, like, you know, you're holding yourself out as actually owning the property. The fourth element is actual. And that is so that the true owner has a cause of action for trespass on which the true owner must act within a statute of limitations. The true owner basically must have some sort of actual cause of action against you for trespassing. It can't be like one of those situations where the guy may have let you stay there or something.
It's not
like
a landlord trying to evict somebody.
Exactly.
That they quit paying their rent and you're trying to evict them. You can't gain adverse possession through just not complying with your lease or something.
Right. The element is that they have to have some sort of element for trespass. So they're trespassing on your land.
So like that Pacific Heights, wasn't that the movie we talked about that time?
We did talk about that, yeah.
That doesn't apply to it. That's just somebody you're having a hard time getting evicted. That's not somebody who's practicing adverse possession.
Right. And I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but I know actually our property teacher in law school mentioned that movie. I don't think they mentioned anything about adverse possession with regards to that. It was more about landlord-tenant and eviction and things like that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking we should clarify on this, that it's not the same as in that landlord-tenant type thing. This is a completely different process.
Right. It's kind of a they're similar, but slightly different. And there's one actual kind of interesting thing when you talk about this fourth element with regard to actual and an actual possession of the property. Decesor must physically use the land as the property owner would. So basically, in accordance with the type of property, location, and uses, merely walking or hunting on land does not establish actual possession. And there's a case on point, and it was actually Cohn v. West Virginia Pulp and Paper, and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit held that Mr. Cohn had failed to establish actual possession by occasionally visiting the land and hunting on it because his actions did not change the land from its wild and natural state. So he didn't.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, he didn't do anything other than I killed me a few deer out there every year.
Now, if he built a house and built a fence around the yard,
yep,
and stayed there for whatever number of years the state recognizes,
or timbered it, yeah. Or if he built the fence around the house, that would be within the curtilage of the house, would it not be?
Within the curtilage.
That's right.
That's right.
So, yeah, but if he made some improvements on the land and changed it, then he did that for a certain period of time, then, yeah, that would be an actual adverse possession thing. But just walking out there and doing some hunting, killing some varmints.
And while the law sounds crazy, I mean, that people can go in and just take possession of something and just live there and suddenly it becomes theirs, it sounds kind of crazy on the surface, but it had very good reasoning behind it at the time it was put in, because there were people that would go in and buy up large tracts of land as areas were being developed, and then they'd go back home to their urban areas, and then these rural areas would need to develop that land. It would be crucial to financial and economic matters in the area and farming, things like that. And here was this land that was all bought up and just sitting there by basically an absent owner.
Right. And we needed to develop this country, so that theory played in well with America. So.
I mean, you think about it, somebody hadn't been to a place in 10 years and doesn't know what's going on there, should they own it?
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of like things in my closet. If I haven't worn them in a year, should I wear them?
I understand. When you move, you have to make that decision. You go up to your attic, here's all this crap you've stored in your attic, and you're getting ready to move, and you say, I have not touched this. It's in the packing boxes from when we moved here 21 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm drawing from my own experience. It's in the packing boxes when we moved here 21 years ago, and it's still there, and I haven't used it. Should I move it again, or should I throw it away? I think I should throw it away.
Yeah. It's a quick trip to the dumpster or the dump and just, pitch that out.
Now, save all the pictures. If there's pictures in there, I'll save those of all the baby Sydney and baby Taylor running around and stuff like that. But the rest of it,
It's funny you mention that, because if you look at pictures of baby Sydney and baby Taylor, you really can't tell much of a difference between the two.
Or baby Riley. Sometimes baby Charlie.
Baby Charlie has that look, too.
Can't tell you the difference.
All the Smurl girls, they have a very strong resemblance to themselves. Now, once they've grown up, they look very different. But as children, man, they look identical.
I have to look at the background to know for sure which one it is, to know, because we lived in several different places. So I have to see where it was. So I say, okay, well, that was Sydney because that was in Cincinnati. That was Taylor because that was Waycross. This was Riley because that was Huntington.
That's funny. So the fifth element is exclusive. And there basically must be no confusion as to who acquires the title once the time has run. So basically there has to be that one sole person or somebody else who has that privity, as we mentioned earlier.
Well, if you get the fifth element. What's Bruce that? Willis and that chick from Resident Evil.
Oh, yeah.
That's the fifth element.
It's a pretty good movie.
I loved that movie. I thought it was great.
It was a good movie. It's kind of crazy, but it's pretty good.
It was ahead of its time, kind of like Blade Runner was, the original one with Harrison Ford.
Yeah. The sound in that movie, too, is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if whoever mixed that movie should have won some sort of Academy Award for the sound of that movie if they didn't.
It's probably Thomas Dolby.
Thomas Dolby?
Yeah.
Is he the one that created Dolby?
Yeah. There you go. Just another trivial fact that you can use in your bar trivia pursuit.
The typical, and this is kind of a, so this is the basic five elements under common law for adverse possession. There's a certain mnemonic which may help you remember these different statutory elements. Do you know what a mnemonic is?
I do, because I know the mnemonic Holmes.
Mnemonic Holmes?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Holmes. That's how you remember the Great Lakes.
Oh.
Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, Superior.
Oh, yeah. So mnemonics, a lot of people use those in law school. And the reason being is that you have things like this, which are have a lot of different elements, and you try to make sure you remember them, like five or six different things.
So you can pass the test and be a lawyer.
Exactly.
And a dude.
A lawyer and a dude. And this one is choat or choat.
So, choat.
Yeah.
Choat. Is there two O's in there? Is that what I should assume?
Well, it's got an O and an A. So choate or choate. Choate, I guess you could say. How do you want to pronounce
like choke
it?
Choke at this point.
How do you want to pronounce it in your own vernacular? But basically, continuous C, hostile H, open O, actual A, and period of time T, and exclusive E. So C H O A T E.
The more you know.
Yeah, the more you know.
That's a good mnemonic. I will remember that. Choate. Adversely possess someone's property, I am going to choate it.
Well,
choate it to the stars.
Upon reading this, I think that my adverse possession claim of your basement may have failed.
Yeah, you haven't openly been there or nothing. Just because you got your crap laying down there doesn't mean that.
Well, no,
it's with my permission and out of the goodness of my heart.
Exactly. It's not. There's no hostility there.
When you get your own basement, that's where your stuff is going, because I need to put in a sound studio in my basement. So,
as I had said, there's various requirements from state by state. So just because you meet these different elements in your state may not mean that you actually have a adversely possessed piece of property. So,
well, the years vary from state to state, too.
Well, they do. Yeah. The typical statute is about 7 years, could be more. Some places it could be like 21 years. Mm-hmm. So it varies a lot. And there's the way the different states are, I mean, there's so many different ways it can happen. And again, it's not a federal law. It's a state law. So it's governed state by state. There's not a federal law for adverse possession. So,
well, that's good. So it doesn't interfere with the state laws like the marijuana ones do, huh?
Exactly. And usually public property is exempt from this. You can't kind of adversely possess like a state park or something like that. So you can't,
like if a school closes down and you go in and sneak into the school and say, yeah, I claim this elementary school in the name of Tommy Smurl. I plant my flag and will live here. The halls of education are open for business. Come learn what I know.
I would be scared to see what kind of education would be dispensed in this place. So
that would not be good knowledge.
Once you've established the basic elements for these adverse possession, and again, this varies state by state, but you usually have to bring some sort of action in the court to basically solidify your adverse possession claim. In a lot of states, this is called a quiet title action. Quiet title action is essentially just a case where you go in front of the court and say, hey, judge, declare this is my property, because you basically are trying to quiet title.
But I don't think that's the way you do it. It's a quiet title action. So you'd say, hey, judge, I have a quiet title action. Shh.
Judge, excuse me, Your Honor, can I approach the bench? Sure.
Only if you tippy-toe.
No. That's not actually how quiet title actions go. I've been involved in a couple of quiet title actions. Usually there's a lot of screaming and yelling. It's like, that's my property. No, that's my property. There's nothing.
Well, that just blows it. You can't have a quiet title if you're going to talk like that. Yeah, that's what I'd say if I'm the judge.
There's generally nothing quiet title about that. One thing interesting when you're talking about property law is essentially this phrase called color of title. And color.
That sounds racist.
Color of title.
We're not going to be racist here, are you?
No.
Okay.
It's a phrase used for real estate law. It basically means that the property owner has the appearance of good and valid title, but there is either not real title there, or like, you know, a deed or something like that, or there's some sort of title that, or some sort of defect in the title that makes it ineffective. So if you say somebody has, well, I have color of title, that basically means that I don't have real title to this, but I have the appearance of it. That's a good legal term, color of title. So kind of interesting.
That's funny. I came across a couple of different cases. There was one down in Florida. Mm-hmm. Now, the Florida law says you have to have possession for 7 years to gain adverse possession.
Right.
So this guy, his last name was Barbosa. I don't know if that's his real name. He saw Pirates of the Caribbean.
Captain Barbosa?
Yeah, he wanted to be Captain Barbosa or something like that. But one of the keys was nobody saw him enter the property. Mm-hmm. Therefore, he was just there all of a sudden. So it was a civil matter. It wasn't a criminal matter.
Right.
Because nobody saw him breaking in or anything. This guy moved in to a 7,522 square foot property, waterfront property in Florida that was valued at $2.5 million. It had been foreclosed on by the bank, and so the people had been evicted. The owners had been left. The bank had it, but had no prospects of selling it, and so it was just sitting there vacant.
And they probably didn't know what was going on there.
No, they didn't know, and this guy was living there. Well, several residents are the ones that brought it up. They were upset about it, and they were getting together money to buy it to get this guy out of there. Well, this guy, he just, he said that he was going to take ownership of it, that he chronicled his adverse possession claim starting in 2012, and he posted on Facebook, "A successful man is one who can lay a firm foundation with the bricks others have thrown at him. I've failed over and over again in my life, and that is why I now succeed."
Huh.
So he hung in there for about 5 years.
Yeah.
But they got him out prior to the 7 years required under Florida law. So he did not get it, but he was there for 5 years.
When they got him out, did he, I assume since it was waterfront property, he went out to his schooner with his crew of undead pirates and proceeded to leave the scene.
They probably walked on the bottom of the water there, like in Pirates of the Caribbean. But then, not to think that this is a completely American thing, here was one in the UK. Brixton, South London. Jack Blackburn. It would have been cooler if it was Jack Black, but it's Jack Blackburn. He squatted in a second floor, one bedroom flat for 13 years. It was abandoned in a declining area, and eventually it burned out. He moved in while it was this burned out shell, and he went in, did plastering work, wiring work, and everything else, and built the thing, put the thing back together. Well, it was owned, somehow it fell to the city. The city actually owned the property.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't do anything about it. And this guy lived there for 13 years. And in London, in this part of London, it's 12 years is what you had to be there. And this guy was there 13. And so he ended up going to court. And the court said he should live there. And the people in the neighborhood backed him up. They all loved him. He was a starving artist, basically. And he was a friend of the people around there. And they all backed him up, said, yeah, he should be there. But here's the catch. They said, you do own the flat. However, you do not own the steps to this second floor apartment. So he could live there and he could own it, but he could never sell it because there's no easement to the apartment. Anybody who bought it would not have the rights to the steps that go up to it.
That's crazy.
He had that. They did it.
Well, there's a whole theory of law in the United States called prescriptive easements. So basically, if you have a piece of property that is essentially landlocked, then you actually get an easement by law to ingress and egress to access that property. So,
well, now this is the common law though, because that's England. So yeah. I don't know how that works, but they said it was he got it when it was burnt out, and now that area has grown back up, and they valued it at $120,000. It's this mark that kind of looks like a cursive L, but I don't know what that means. Is that pounds?
That would be a pound.
A pound? 120,000 pounds. I don't know what that's equivalent to.
British pounds sterling.
So that's probably good. I don't know. But
I think that'd probably be about 190,000 US maybe.
And it was a one bedroom flat. That's not bad.
At the current exchange rate. I don't know.
Well, that was interesting. One of our founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, said, if you want something you've never had, you must be willing to do something you've never done. And there's a group in New York that is basically subscribes to squatting as a movement. And their motto is, don't just squat to live, live to squat. And here's their reasoning. They ran a survey, and in 2010, Manhattan alone had over 24,000 empty apartments in vacant buildings.
Wow.
In Bushwick and South Bronx, there were 4,092 luxury apartment units sitting vacant. There is an estimated 35,000 homeless people in New York. So all these vacant apartments sitting around, and they could basically house the population of the homeless people there.
Yeah.
The squatting movement does not believe that homes should be allowed to sit vacant, being treated as a commodity and speculated over for profit. whole blocks of empty buildings are often foreclosed on by banks and may be held as vacant, waiting for prices to improve before selling. So they advocate to squat in these, and they tell people how to do it, and they organize people and tell them the best ways. And Reclaim NYC is a homeless advocacy group, and they look for empty lots or buildings, because if it's an empty lot, what they do is they basically put up tent cities in there. And they claim, then they live there openly in these tent cities, and if they can live there long enough, then they own the lot.
Yeah, I went doing some basic research on this. It seemed like New York actually had some of the more lenient adverse possession laws in the books.
Well, I think that's why. But it said, what you do is look for these empty lots or buildings and check on who owns it. And if it's a bank or a city, it's a prime target. And they say, put your own locks on. That's the first step. Put your own locks on the doors. Black out all the windows. Stay under the radar for the first month coming and going. They advise you leave only early in the morning or late at night, or come and go early in the morning, late at night, so people don't notice you. Have your mail sent there in your name so that you receive mail there. And they say that for the most part, if police hassle you and you show that you have mail there for over a month, they'll leave you alone. And it says, make it look lived in. Don't just have a vacant room with a bucket in the middle that you do your business in.
You pop a squat in?
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't be popping a squat while you're popping a squat.
Put up curtains, put in furniture, if you can do wiring stuff. And they say a lot of times utilities, as long as the bill's getting paid, they don't care. You can hook up electricity and get a legitimate account and pay your bill. Utilities don't care whether you own it or not.
Yeah, don't go stealing it from a neighbor, though, and putting it in there, because that'll get you in some hot water.
That's right.
If you're stealing hot water from a neighbor,
you can get in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting hot water over hot water. Huh?
Exactly.
Well, they said there are actually 11 buildings that were taken over in a block in the early 80s, and they are still being held by squatters.
Yeah.
And they have the rights to them with the privity that they passed it on. So, I mean, you know, it's probably not the same original people, but through privity, they still have them.
Yeah. I guess if you basically say, like, contracted away to the next person, that shows privity, because that's a good way to do it.
But it's amazing the things we learn on this podcast, because if you had asked me ahead of time my general feelings about adverse possession, I'd say, well, that's just something that people of no moral value would go and do. And after I read this, especially in New York City, when you look at that, I don't see anything wrong with that. I'd help those dudes out.
We should do an episode on basically what happens when people pass away and estate taxes and redistribution of wealth. And that might change your mind about some of those type things too, because it was eye opening when I started learning about that in law school. I was like, wow, redistribution of wealth is probably a good thing.
Yeah, probably so. And one of the things that caught my eye about that was they talked about Bushwick. And of course, Taylor lives in Bushwick.
Oh, does she really?
Yeah, that's where she lives. And there, she was a victim of gentrification there because when she moved in, it wasn't that great of a neighborhood and it wasn't that prosperous of an area. Everything's grown up, and they put in all these luxury apartments, and everything gained value. So they priced her out of her apartment just to get her out so they could raise the rent on it, because they couldn't raise the rent to where they wanted to as long as she was there. So she had to move to a different apartment because of the processes they're going through there. But at the time she moved in, people didn't want to live there.
Yeah, so she suffered through it and then couldn't reap the rewards.
Right.
Well, there's some defenses to adverse possession, and one which we kind of touched on was called neighborly accommodation. So basically, if you let your neighbor do something, they can't come back later and claim adverse possession on you. For example, like if you kind of let your neighbor go through your yard or something like that, or
then he claim an easement or something.
Yeah, well, they can try to claim an easement. That's kind of a different issue. Yeah, they can't try to adversely possess part of your property by just saying, well, I used it.
I'm retired and I like to garden. Would you mind if I garden this back bit of yours and grew some vegetables and I'll share them with you and everything?
Exactly.
And then later he tries to say, that's my property. I've been gardening it for 7 years or whatever the limit is.
Exactly. That would be one of those neighborly accommodation type defenses to it. Mm-hmm. And also kind of a shitty thing to do.
Well, yeah. That's not the kind of neighbor you'd want.
Now, there's another legal issue, which is called eminent domain, and that's whenever a government agency comes and tries to take over your property.
Well, that's when they want to put a road through there.
Right.
And so then they say, we're going to give you fair market value, right?
Right. Which is kind of similar to this, but that's something a little bit different. But it's kind of somewhat related. Maybe we'll do an episode on that at a different time. But so that's kind of closely related to this.
Eminent domain.
Yeah, I just
that
like
that. Sounds like sounds awesome, too. Eminent domain. We're going to exercise eminent domain on your ass, and there's nothing you can do about it.
There's one case site that I really wanted to get out there, and it was under land snatching.
Land snatching?
Yep. Land, sea snatch, and that would be Haley.
Land, sea snatch?
Haley what? Versus, Haley versus United States, where Haley 7, U.S. nothing.
That sounds like a baseball score. What?
You see, it can be done. One thing that stands for between me and the property is the rightful owner.
I don't even know what I've just heard. I'm still hung up on the land, sea, snatch.
it's one of those things.
Okay. Well, I've had three bourbons. I'm not sure where we're at. We skipped the beer tonight and went with the hard stuff.
It's from Blazing Saddles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I don't know if we'll put that in the podcast or not, but we'll see.
If you're hearing it, I guess we decided to.
Yeah.
I didn't know what you were saying. I was completely lost there.
Well,
I thought maybe I'd been hit on the head real hard.
There's a scene where Hedley Lamarr, when he's trying to steal a property from the people of Rock Ridge, where he looks through his law books. He's like, maybe there's legal precedent. Let me look it up. He goes, land snatching, land snatching, land snatching. Land. Yeah, here it is. Sea snatch. Flips pages more. He's like, Haley versus United States. Haley 7, U.S. nothing. You see, it can be done. One thing that stands between me and that property is the rightful owner.
Well, you lost me. Yeah. I mean, I saw Blazing Saddles, but I'm not an aficionado.
Oh, I love that movie. Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs.
Did Justin get that part?
He did. Justin got some legal briefs.
All right. That's good. He was ready for it?
He was ready for it.
All right.
They were MeUndies. Those were the legal briefs he got.
Oh, well, the boy wouldn't let me down. We got to do an ad for MeUndies when I was in Sydney.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
I heard it was a lot of fun.
It was a little uncomfortable.
I bet.
Seeing as how we were both talking about wearing them, and we didn't want to talk about a father and daughter with matching underwear. We just left it at, we will never know.
Well, legal briefs is not about underwear. Legal briefs is about...
We have illegal briefs here.
Or no briefs at all.
Commando!
So legal briefs is the part of the show where we talk about some different legal terms that we went over. Usually it's me asking Tommy if he remembers some of the different legal terms that we talked about. And just helps reinforce what we spoke about and really, really hammer home that future bar trivia answers for your
questions.
Because
we want you to win.
Yeah, we do. Because bar trivia...
Your standing at your local bar is important to us because we'd rather have you standing than laying.
Yes, absolutely. You don't want to be laying under the bar.
The bar isn't set very high.
The first term is you suck a P.O.
You suck a P.O.? That was not in there anywhere. Where does that come from? Is that another Blazing Saddles reference?
That was the Roman law that allowed someone to obtain possession that I kind of butchered earlier when I was trying to say it.
You didn't say you suck a P.O. before.
You suck a P.O. I don't know.
You suck a P.O.
That was maybe not a fair one.
No, I don't think so. The objection is sustained.
Statute of limitations.
Statute of limitations. That means that it's something's run out. Like if it's got a statute of limitations, you have to apply your motion before it runs out of a certain period of time.
Right. It's a period of time that limits bringing certain types of legal action. So color of title.
Color of title. Well, we talked about that. That's that racist thing that you have there where certain color titles get better things than other ones or something. And we've got to eliminate that. We're working towards that.
No, color of title is a phrase used for real estate law, which means that a piece of property has the appearance of good and valid title, but there's actually not real title there because there's not a deed or there's some other defect that makes the actual title ineffective.
Hey, I know one.
What's that?
That you don't have ownership to the steps that go to your second floor apartment. That would be a defect in your color of title.
That would definitely be a defect in your color of title.
There you go. We came across one. We had mutual means there. You had one end, I had the other, and we meet in the middle.
And another term is quiet title.
Quiet title. That's when everybody has to be quiet in there and in the courtroom, and we say, I have an action that's a quiet title. I want to slip this by someone before they notice it or before they sober up.
before they sober up.
Yeah, because once they sober up, they're going to be pissed.
The quiet title is a court action to have the court declare that you own the property, which is kind of maybe similar to what the guy in England did, or London, England, same place.
Well, it wasn't London. It was Brixton, London.
Brixton.
Not that I'm familiar with any of them. I don't know.
Well, anyway, the guy in Brixton where he had some sort of action to say, hey, I own this flat.
I would like to go there one day.
Me too.
Dun, 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 dun. You are here.
Look, yay. Kids, Big Ben, Parliament.
Winchester Abbey and the Tower, Big Ben.
And the last term.
The red cheeks of the little children. What? You never heard that song?
No.
That's an old one from the 60s.
Yep.
I have to look that one up. I don't remember what it's called. I don't remember who it was.
Justin asked me, he's like, I don't know how I'm going to fill in for Tommy. I said, just make some Led Zeppelin references and some obscure 60s and 70s songs that I don't know what you're talking about.
Just like One Toke Over the Line, huh?
Pretty much. So the last term is chote or chote.
Chote. That is an, what do you call it? Not an acronym or a homonym. It's a
mnemonic.
A mnemonic. And it's for the five elements of adverse possession.
Exactly. And what are they?
They are C-H-O-A-T-E.
What does the C stand for?
C is for combine.
Nope.
H is for hostile.
Yes.
O is for ovary.
Nope.
A is for another chance.
Nope.
T is for tirade, if I don't get this right. E is for excellence in communication.
No.
Damn.
You got one.
That's one out of five. Is that about a 90?
90% wrong. It means continuous, hostile, open, actual, time, and exclusive.
So, I need another drink.
Yeah. Good thing that the whole test didn't rely on that one question. So
good thing that wasn't my ACT, huh?
Yeah. So, well, that's going to do it on our episode for adverse possession or squatter's rights. So I hope everybody knows what they need to do to go out there and get a piece of property.
Yeah, go out there and cop a squat.
Pop a squat.
And if you're in New York, you should contact that advocacy group that will help you find a place to stay and keep it without paying for it.
Sure, why not?
Occupy those 30,000 vacant apartments in New York City just sitting there.
Power to the people.
That's right.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I am just a dude.